All right, if you open up to 3 John, we're going to spend the last two class periods looking at this book. And we're going to continue on the way we normally do as we begin a book. We'll have to abbreviate that with 3 John a little bit for the sake of time. So one of the things that we have been doing in each, as we begin each book, is we go through an inductive Bible study approach, where we're doing 3 things. We're observing the book, which is just simply going through and jotting down all the information that we can find, all the clues that the author gives us about himself, about who he's writing to, and other people that he mentions, historical evidence, events that take place. And then we move from that to interpretation, which is looking at what the text meant, would have meant to the recipients at the time, or the ones that were receiving the letter. And then finally we look at application. After we look at what it would have meant to them, then we can start applying that for our own lives. And so we go in that order so that we try not to take anything out of context. And so tonight we're going to cover up observation, and we're going to start looking at interpreting 3 John, specifically the first 8 verses tonight, and then on Sunday we'll finish up the book with 9 through 15. So let's go ahead and read this together. That's the first step. Even in the observation step here, is to read it. Try to read it as many times as you can when you're studying this on your own at home. And so let's just go ahead and get started here. So 3 John, beginning in verse 1. The elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that all may go well with you and that you may be in good health as it goes well with your soul. For I rejoiced greatly when the brothers came and testified to your truth, as indeed you are walking in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Beloved, it is a faithful thing you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are, who testified to your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their journey in a manner worthy of God. For they have gone out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support people like these, that we may be fellow workers for the truth. I have written something to the church, but Diotrephes, who likes to put himself first, does not acknowledge our authority. So if I come, I will bring up what he is doing, talking wicked nonsense against us. And not content with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers and also stops those who want to and puts them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate evil, but imitate good. Whoever does good is from God. Whoever does evil has not seen God. Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone and from the truth itself. We also add our testimony, and you know that our testimony is true. I had much to write to you, but I would rather not write with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon, and we will talk face to face. Peace be to you. The friends greet you. Greet the friends, each by name. All right, so now that we've gone through 3 John, let's go ahead and let's start observing this. We're going to go through this a little bit more quickly than normal. Usually we ask a ton of questions about all this. I'm just going to kind of briefly mention some of these things. As you're looking at this text and you're reading it, you start jotting down notes. The first thing we want to think about is who the author is. And so he mentions himself here in verse 1 in the singular form here as the elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. So this is the elder that's writing here. This is how he began 2 John as well. And so that's how we will refer to him. If you drop down to verse 12, it mentions him in a plural sense. He says, Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone. And from the truth itself, we also add our testimony. And you know that our testimony is true. And so he at least mentions himself not only here in verse 1, but also in verse 12 as giving testimony to who this Demetrius is. In verse 10, He mentions, so if I come, I will bring up what he is doing, speaking of Diotrephes. So he is not present with these people. He is elsewhere, and yet he is hoping to be able to see them. And you also will see in verse 13 that same idea expressed. His desire is, he says, I had much to write to you, but I would rather not write with pen and ink. I would rather see you face to face and converse with you and talk with you rather than having to send you a letter. And so that's what his desire is. So this is the elder. He's writing to this person, and he explains to him that these are some of my desires that I have. I want to see you face to face. I'd rather talk to you about all this than have to write anymore. So that's the author. Did you all see anything else concerning the author that you wanted to point out? All right, so as far as the recipients are concerned, this really is the recipient in singular here. So this, who is that? Who's he writing to?
Gaius.
And so immediately, we're still in the observation set. We're not trying to interpret who this is, but you might begin asking yourself, have I heard that name before? Does it come up at any other time in the New Testament? And so you might start jotting down some passages where he comes up. And then as you get into the interpretation phase, then you can start thinking more about who actually is this guy. Is he the same as some other Gaius that are mentioned in the New Testament? All right. So yes, he's writing to Gaius. He is mentioned here in verse 2, sorry. He says, beloved, I pray that all may go well with you. So he is mentioned here as Gaius. He's mentioned here as the beloved. He is loved by this elder. He's loved by this author. And verse 5, beloved, it is a faithful thing you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are. So we're getting some insight into who this Gaius is, what he's all about, right? He's hospitable. He walks in truth. Verse 15, peace be to you. The friends greet you. Greet the friends each by name. So he shares some things in common with some others. He has friends. And it seems to be that these would be friends because of what they share in Christ. So this person that he's writing to is somebody who he loves. And he's somebody who others love because of the hospitality he's showing to some of these preachers that are journeying and preaching the gospel elsewhere, and he's having them in his home. And he's going to be encouraged to continue to do that, even with those he doesn't know. All right, so that's what we know about this recipient. Now, I do want to mention here, I think this is it's interesting that if you're going to study 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, there's really a funnel-down approach that you could take to looking at these books. And we've kind of hinted at this before, but as you're studying 1 John, 1 John is a little bit more general into who he's writing to. All right, it's more open-ended. It's not necessarily, he doesn't specifically hammer home on a specific group of people. It's more generic in that sense. You get into 2 John, and then it's a little bit more specific, right? He's writing to an elect lady, who is probably a church that he's writing to. And then as you get to 3 John, he gets even more specific and he writes to a specific person. All right, so he starts broad from 1 John and he starts to funnel in to a specific person that he writes to. You can see that? So as you're studying through these epistles, you can kind of think about it in those terms. And he really does. 1 John, he talks, he's specific about the topics, but there are a lot of topics. 2 John, he gets a little bit more specific with the topic, even though it's the same, similar issue as 1 John. And then 3 John, he gets even more specific, and there seems to be a little bit of a different subject or issue he deals with in 3 John that's not even a part of 1 and 2 John. So Just keep that in mind. I think that's interesting to think about anyway, that this you have this funneled down approach as you go from 1st to 2nd and then to 3rd John. All right, and then we also want to look at some others that are mentioned, other people that are mentioned in this text. So you'll see in verse 3 and in verse 5 that he mentions, "If I rejoice greatly when the brothers came and testified to your truth." So there are brethren he talks about, he mentions here. He mentions in verse 5 these brothers again, and he mentions that they're also, some of these brothers are strangers to Gaius. And then, and so we're left thinking about and trying to interpret, all right, so what's that going to mean? Who are these people? Are they maybe evangelists or preachers that have been traveling and journeying and carrying on, you know, mission work just like Paul did and Barnabas? So is that what he's talking about? And so you're going to start asking yourself those questions. And then he mentions what is said about these brothers in verse 8. And that is that these brothers, these strangers who are going around, traveling or journeying, they're worthy of the support that they're going to be given, or that I encourage you to give to these people. They're worthy of it. All right, so this speaks to their character. And then, of course, he mentions verse 10, he mentions Diotrephes, which would be the opposite of this Gaius, and opposite of these brethren or strangers that are traveling. There's definitely a difference between them and who this man Diotrephes is, who likes to take matters into his own hands and is very power hungry. And so he says about him, he talks wicked nonsense. He refuses to welcome the brothers. He stops those who want to help the brothers and puts them out of the church. So he just takes matters into his own hands. And so he deals with Diotrephes. And then in verse 12, another person here is Demetrius, who's again is the opposite of this Diotrephes. He is somebody that is recommended by this elder. And then, of course, you have here in verse 15, these friends, these friends that are greeting Gaius. All right, and then finally, the last thing we would do in the observation phase is look for themes and ideas that come up a lot. And so I just mentioned some here. Joy is mentioned quite a few times. It's mentioned in all three books. Truth is mentioned, verse 1, verse 3, verse 4. He talks a lot about testifying, or this testimony that comes up. And so bearing witness of these people and what they see happening, what they see happening with Gaius, how he responds to these brethren. Well, people are testifying about that and about his love and how he's walking in the truth. And then about Demetrius, there's a testimony about him as well as you know, Diotrephes as well, John's going to talk about. Church is mentioned three times, and then, of course, brothers mentioned in verse 6, verse 9, and verse 10. So those are some themes: joy, truth, testimony. Those are the key ideas in the book. All right. That was a kind of a quick run-through of observation of 3 John. Any questions on that before we start interpreting and looking at the text? Yes, Jacob. Okay. Sure. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. And of course, I think that's probably, he's probably being generic there in terms of, you know, I guess 1st and 2nd John, he's talked about them being children as well, right? So this is a endearment. He's showing his love for these brethren. And specifically Gaius, but then anybody who is walking in truth, he has an appreciation and a love for. He has some camaraderie there because they share the same thing.
Okay. So I just compared 2nd John and 3rd John, and in 2nd John it lays out the warning that if someone goes too far, Mm-hmm. That they are not to receive them or to be afraid. Basically, don't fellowship with that person.
Right. Well, so are you asking if he's dealing with the same issue?
Yes.
We'll talk about that as we start interpreting the book. I think there's probably a little bit of a different issue he's dealing with in 3 John versus 2 John. Versus 2 John are dealing with a very similar issue that you have these people that were among them and they've left. And now 3 John, he's going to be... The main issue is supporting those who are trying to teach the truth. Now, there's obviously what you're going to see in 2 and 3 John is in 3 John you have a lesson about hospitality and who you show that to, the ones who are teaching the truth properly. And you can go to the other extreme, and the other extreme is in 2 John, where he deals with those who you're not supposed to show hospitality to. So there is... He deals with hospitality from both sides or both angles. But I think the issue in 3 John is a little bit more specific to who you support versus 2 John is more about those who have left and don't walk in the truth anymore. So that's a good question. Good question. All right, anything else? All right, so let's go ahead and we're going to interpret 3 John now. And so I'm just going to put the text up here. We're going to look at this a verse at a time. And just on the left there are the questions we're going to try to answer as we're going through this. So as you look here at verse 1, the elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. So this letter is addressed to whom? Gaius, which is Latin. And so... obviously, this name is familiar, right? It comes up at other times in the New Testament. So let's just look at some of those for just a moment. You have in Acts chapter 19, in verse 29, so the city was filled with confusion, and they rushed together into the theater, dragging with them Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians who were Paul's companions in travel. If you flip over to the next chapter, in chapter 20, and you look at verse 4, Sopater the Berean, son of Pyrrhus, accompanied him, and of the Thessalonians Aristarchus, and Secundus, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy, and the Asians, Tychicus, and Trophimus. All right, so there's Gaius mentioned in those two places. And then you have in Romans chapter 16... At the end of Romans here in chapter 16, verse 23, Gaius, who is host to me and to the whole church, greets you. Erastus, the city treasurer, and our brother Quartus greet you. And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 14, I thank God that I baptized none of you except Crispus and Gaius. And the Gaius that's mentioned in Romans and 1 Corinthians 1 here, probably the same Gaius. Is there any connection between the Gaiuses that are mentioned in Acts or Romans or Corinthians and the one he mentions in 3 John? What do you think? No, there's really no way to answer that for sure, right? It'd be very difficult to do that. What would be the timeline as when Romans was written versus when 3 John is written? They're most, yeah, so they're most likely way far apart from each other, okay? So probably this Gaius is not the same Gaius that's mentioned in Romans or in Corinthians because of the chronology or the timeline of when these books are written. 3 John is one of the last books written, and Romans would be one of the first books that was written. So there's be a big gap in years. The other thing to keep in mind is, while we don't know for sure, But another thing to keep in mind is that Gaius was a very famous type of name to use. You use that name all the time during this time period. So there are a lot of people with that name. So it's really hard to pinpoint for sure if this would have been one that Paul would have known or not. But most likely not. They're probably most likely from different areas or regions of the world as well. So, but it's good to you know, jot down those passages and look at them and then think about it as to who this guy could possibly be. So what's said about him? What's said about Gaius?
He's called beloved, or in some translations, dear friend.
Okay. So he is, it says about him that he's loved in truth. All right, he's beloved. And so what do you think that means, that he's loved in truth? Okay.
To the elect lady and her children, whom I love in truth, not only I, but also all who have come to know the truth, because the truth remains in us.
Okay, so they share something in common. That's why there's so much love here. And so this is probably, you know, like just like if, you know, if I were to refer to you all as brothers and sisters in Christ, that's an endearing term, but it's because we share something. We share Christ together. And so I think that is partly what the idea of that is here. He's truly loved. And love here, that word love is a term that here means sacrificial love, which is what is being referenced. So so this guy is beloved by this elder. In verse 2, it says, "Beloved, I pray that all may go well with you." And this is like most letters begin, whether it's an epistle or a historical letter. A lot of letters begin this very same way. They begin with a prayer. And so what's the prayer that's offered up? Okay. Okay. Okay, so he mentions, I pray that all may go well with you, that you may be in good health as it goes well with your soul. And so it could mean that he could be talking about the physical and the spiritual. It could also, when he says good health and I hope it goes well with your soul, they could be interconnected with one another. It may not be so much an emphasis on physical health as it is that in their culture, this would be a contemporary idiom, is what we would say, of speaking of spiritual health. That's what he's talking about. So was Gaius well off spiritually? Yes, he was, right? It says, I love you in truth. So this man, in terms of spiritual health, is rock solid from all we can tell. And so just keep in mind that historically letters like this are very common. They start off this way. Most all begin in a similar way. So he prays that his soul is well. He knows his soul will be well if in fact he is well spiritually. They're connected with one another. So in verse 3 and 4 then, he says, "For I rejoice greatly when the brothers came and testified to your truth, as indeed you are walking in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth." So what does the elder say caused him to rejoice? Okay. Yep, so he talks about this, his faithfulness. He says, when the brothers came and testified to your truth. All right, so they're testifying about his faithfulness, or testifying about him. When it says when the brothers came and testified to your truth, what truth? Say that again. All right, the Word of God. So walking in the words of God, walking in the way of Christ. That's exactly right. How do you walk in truth? That's right. Walk in the light, which is what we've been talking about, right? In 1 John chapter 1 and verse 6, if we say we have fellowship with Him while we walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. But if we walk in the light as He is in the light, we have fellowship with one another. All right, so that's exactly right. This Gaius that has been reported by some who have come back to the elder. They're reporting about this guy whose name is Gaius, and they're saying he is walking in the truth. He's rock solid. He's well off spiritually. And of course, you have also in 2 John verse 2, because of the truth that abides in us and will be with us forever. And then he says in verse 4, I rejoice greatly to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we are commanded by the Father. So they're being obedient to the will of God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that walking in truth starts with your faith and strengthening that faith. And the more your faith is weakened, the less likely you are to keep walking in the light, right? Very good. All right, and so and when you read this, it's so refreshing, isn't it? When you think about this report, I imagine this elder so refreshed when he hears what's happening with Gaius. It's a refreshing thought when you think about people who are doing something like this. Joy is had with one another when we're doing this. And that's what he says in 1 John 1, verse 4. We are writing these sayings so that our joy may be complete. He begins 2 John in verse 4. I rejoice greatly to find some of you walking in truth. And then here in 3 John, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in truth. Verse 3, for I rejoice greatly when the brothers came and testified about your truth. So there is much joy to be had when you're doing what the Lord asks you to do. So there is an emphasis in all three letters on joy. And I'll just go ahead and mention this in John 15, when he's talking about the branch, the vine. Jesus is the true vine. And we are the branches. At the end of that, when he says, if you will stay connected to me and be faithful to me, what's he say? You have joy. Right? There's joy. I have joy. You have joy. So it's important to be connected to Christ. That's where our joy comes from. Look at verse 5. Beloved, it is a faithful thing you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are. So on whose behalf has Gaius been acting faithfully? I highlight the answers too for you. All right, so these brothers who are also strangers, okay? And the elder seems to be commending Gaius for being loyal to these men who are traveling in an effort to preach and to teach the gospel. And that's what we have going on here in verses 5 through verse 8. And what appears to be happening then is that these brethren are coming back. Some of them have visited. He's shown hospitality to them. And they're coming back and they're reporting to this elder good things about Gaius. But he's also going to encourage Gaius that there are others who are going to be coming. And make sure you do the same thing for them. Make sure you support them in their efforts as well. And so that's what you have going on here. These brethren are coming back from their missionary journey to John and are reporting about Gaius and his faithfulness and his hospitality. And then he's going to encourage Gaius to support those who will come to you on their missionary journeys as well. So you have that going on. And then in verse 6... In verse 6, the first part of this, he says, who testified to your love before the church. So where they testified to Gaius' love? Where are they doing this at? They're doing it before the church. They're coming to the church and they're proclaiming good things about this man and all that he's done in supporting them, which is supporting the work of the gospel. And so, and presumably, I think what we can see here is that this church that they're speaking to is probably where John is, where this elder is, okay? And so then the second part of verse 6, what does the elder say Gaius should do for these brethren and the brethren that, that will continue to go to him? What are they to do? What's he to do? Okay, send them on their way. The New American Standard says send them on their journey. And that phrase is one word in Greek. And it's used in a lot of places in the New Testament. And so I want us to think about some of those for just a moment. So let's flip back to Romans 15. And notice verse 24. I hope to see you in passing as I go to Spain, and to be helped on my journey thereby, or to be helped on my journey there by you, once I have enjoyed your company for a while. So this phrase here, send them on their way, is the same Greek word that is used here in Romans 15, 24, when it says to be helped on my journey. It's the same one Greek word. And so well, let's look at another one. So 1 Corinthians 16. In 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 6, and perhaps I will stay with you or even spend the winter so that you may help me on my journey wherever I go. Verse 11, so let no one despise him. Help him on his way in peace that he may return to me, for I am expecting him with the brothers. And so all these phrases about help him on his way, help him on his journey, that's the same Greek word that he uses here in 3 John to tell Gaius that you are to send these men on their way. And then, of course, you have Titus. So let's look at this one as well. In Titus chapter 3, verse 13. Do your best to speed Zenas the lawyer and Apollos on their way. See that they lack nothing. All right? And so some versions may say Godspeed, but that term speed there means help. And interestingly, in that verse, it's really, in the Greek, it's used twice. And so he's really talking about helping them. Not just, don't just send them on their way, but you help them, get them prepared for this journey in which they are to go and preach the gospel to others. And so, and we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Verse 7. For they have gone out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. All right. So, what's it mean here when the elder says the brothers accept nothing from the Gentiles? What's that mean? Okay, somebody outside of Christ. Yeah, Gentile here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Gentile here just means pagan. And so it's probably a reference to those who aren't believers, aren't Christians. And so it may be, you think about this example, it may be, you know, if I were to, if you think about the mindset that you're a Christian, you're going somewhere else to preach where there aren't any Christians, and maybe, what if your mindset is, maybe I can say something that they'll really like. And if it's something they really like, maybe they'll start supporting me. And that's not a very profitable thought to have. It's a kind of a evil thought to be having, right? That you're just preaching something so you can get support from outsiders. And he's saying, that's not what they're doing here. So it probably speaks to the character and faith and the trust of these preachers, place that they're putting their faith in God, that God will provide for them as they teach the gospel. They're not going to try to say anything that would necessarily get them support. They're there to preach the gospel. It's for the name, the sake of the name, is what it says. And so Gaius happens to be one of these people supporting them so that there is no need for them to stress about where they're going to get help. And so support and help allows these brethren to preach effectively without worrying about support and where they're going to get that to survive and to live. They can go about their business teaching the gospel. And that really is helpful when we think about, we support people that are preaching in different areas. And our being able to do that allows them to do their job well. This is for God. And so that's really what this idea of sending them on their way means. Another way to, another definition for that Greek word is fit him out with prerequisites for the journey. And I like that. I think that's exactly what he's encouraging Gaius to do for these people. All right, so John gives three reasons for helping these brethren. And two are found in verse 7. And that is that they are he helps them because they're traveling for the sake of the name. He is to help them because they receive no support for where they were going from the pagans. And then in verse 8 is the third one. He says, therefore, we ought to support people like these that we may be fellow workers for the truth. Here's a third reason that he gives for why he should help them and support them on their missionary journeys. And it's because they share in this work together for the truth. If they support them, they're sharing in the work that they're doing. It's a sense of fellowship because of the same truth. And emphasis is on financially supporting someone, which means you are having fellowship with those who are standing for the truth. Now, I want to look at Philippians. I know we're getting ready to ring here. But I'm going to look at Philippians and I want to notice something here in chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 5. Because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, and I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. It is right for me to feel this way about you all, because I hold you in my heart, for you are all partakers with me of grace, both in my imprisonment and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel. For God is my witness how I yearn for you all with the affection of Christ Jesus. That's a section about partaking in the same thing. Partaking in Christ together. Sharing in Christ together. And they're partakers of this good work. There's full oneness in this evangelistic work that's going on. And the opportunities to do so are immense, even in our world today. Now, I want to notice, and we talked about this a little bit. It's hard to see that, sorry. I want to notice how this fits the mirror image of 2 John. And yet it's from the opposite extreme. Because in 2 John, he had the command not to show hospitality, nor to greet false teachers who come to their doors. And the idea is that you would be partaking or having fellowship with the opposite of the truth. And so it's important to show our support, but it needs to be for the good works in truth. And so there's a consistent message by John that's shown from different points of view. He's making the same point that he made in 2 John, just from the opposite end of the spectrum. You do support those who are teaching and proclaiming the gospel of Christ. And as you do that, as you support them, you have fellowship with them. Now, I want to consider this as we close. This issue is important to this elder. And it consists of half the book. Half this book is devoted to this idea. Notice again here at the end of verse 6 what he says. He says that it's to be done in a manner worthy of God. And so we need to understand that what we're doing as we help support the work of the gospel, it's for God. And it's imperative that you give to the needs in a way that is worthy of the fellowship. So let me ask you this. How did God invest in the furtherance of the gospel? He expects us to support those who further the gospel. How did God invest in that? He gave His Son, right? He gave us everything. He gave us His own Son to further the gospel. And as we think about helping others who are trying to proclaim the truth that need support, let's think about it from that standpoint. God gave it all. And as we give to help that, we think about what He's done, and that's how we help give in a way that's worthy of the cross. Yeah.
We have to have faith in that individual.
Sure.
It's representing that individual's life. We get it through channels sometimes.
Right.
We don't ever really deal with the individual.
Well, that is a very good point. And you do have to be careful. Right? You have to be careful. And I think one of the things you see here in 3 John is that these people that they're supporting, there's the elder here and that church there, they're all testifying about these people who are getting this support. They come with good reputation. And so that's an excellent point. It's not, you know, if you just off a whim, just go and support somebody you know nothing about, you may end up with the second John, where you're showing hospitality to someone who doesn't teach the truth. And so I think that is a good point. We have to be careful, and that's why there needs to be testimony, them testifying or witnesses of who these people are and being recommended. That's a very good point. All right, anything as we close? Anything else? All right, well, we'll finish 3 John, and that'll be the last class of the quarter. So we'll look at 9 through 15 on Sunday.